You are listening to City Lights Podcast. City Lights is a community inviting people to follow us as we follow Jesus. We are currently in our series, Brokenness is Beautiful, where Jesus provides a piercing perspective about life. He reveals a paradoxical view of beauty, which is counterintuitive and quite surprisingly found in brokenness. We hope you will discover with us that brokenness is beautiful.
We are in our series called Brokenness is Beautiful, and we're going to jump back into that, and we're going to be in Matthew 5 in a couple of minutes. But I want to start telling you a story this morning. My family has the privilege of hearing a lot of different kind of information about previous presidents and world leaders. My wife's grandfather is Billy Graham, and so we get to hear all these stories that never make it to media or the news or anything. And one of the stories that really captivated me years and years ago was when Bill Clinton was our president and the whole immorality and affair happened. And watching it from the news side of things and seeing how it all unfolded and saw how our president would try to justify or change words or define words. I don't know if you guys remember that time when people said, "Did you do this thing?" And he said, "Well, no, I didn't exactly do that thing. I did not have a specific kind of relations." I'm not going to get into the whole thing that he said. But he tried to basically almost defend himself rather than just own the fact that he had done something immoral and horrible. He just tried to own it. He tried to own it. And so, he tried to disown it and defend himself. And that's all I saw. And if you guys, how many of you guys remember watching that on the news when he was trying to defend himself? It was pretty, you know, it was awful for him to do the things he did with Monica Lewinsky, but then it was also just, it felt almost worse that he just wasn't willing to own it and just come out and say sorry. Well, when we talked with Daddy Bill, that's what we call Billy, when we talked with him, he actually presented a very different side of Bill and Hillary Clinton. And it was really interesting because he said that when Bill and Hillary, the president and the first lady, went to see him, they went to see him right after it just became public. And what Billy describes in that scene, in that setting with them, was drastically different than what we saw in the news. He actually described Bill Clinton as somebody who was weeping, remorseful, and even repentant. He was embracing everything that he did was wrong. He was confessing it, crying with Hillary, united. They sat there with Billy Graham, and they just basically said, you know, what are we going to do? And they went to him for counsel. Billy has been a counselor to so many presidents. And they basically just said, what do we do? And Daddy Bill looked at them and just simply said to him, just do what you're doing right now. Just let the world know what you've done is wrong. Just go ahead and own it. Just embrace the fact that you did something so broken. Just let the world see that. Do you know what the president said? I can't do that. I can't. I can't let the world see me like this. You know why? He went on to say, because the president of the United States is supposed to be strong. He's strong. He can't make mistakes like this. And even if he makes mistakes like this, he can't bow down and admit it like that to the public. It's too vulnerable. It's too much. I can't do that. And so we saw the whole thing unfold in the news, and it was kind of nauseating to watch. But behind the scenes, he looked like he was, well, the word for our series, it looked like he was broken. It really, truly looked like Bill Clinton was broken. At least it did when I heard the story from Billy Graham about his brokenness. But something happened in a certain context. He seemed to have every characteristic of brokenness, but then went into a different context, a context of other people watching. He was not willing to embrace his brokenness at that deep level. My son this last week, he's 9. He's over in City Kids this morning. I was walking up the stairs, and he was very, very like self-controlled, and he said, "Dad, may I speak with you in private, please?" Just like that. And we're usually not that, you know, proper. He's like, "May I speak with you in private?" I'm like, "Yes, son, you may." I said, "Yeah, okay." And he said, "I need to speak with you in private." And I said, "Okay." And he was going downstairs, I was going up, and he said, "Down here." I said, "No, up here." And so I went upstairs, and listen, I lived a pretty colorful life, meaning I'm 34 now, but the years passed. I was really interested in learning things myself, even if somebody said it wasn't good or hurtful or painful or hurt others. A lot of times I wanted to really see for myself if it would. And so when I see my children, Annabelle or Liam, and they say, "I need to tell you something," and I can tell in their body language is a big deal, my mind was racing what Liam was saying, "I need to talk to you in private." Because I don't know if he's ever said to me, "I need to talk to you in private, Dad." So we go upstairs, And I get down on one knee. And when I get down on one knee, he got down on two knees. I'm like, oh man, this is major. I was getting to your level. Now you're even making yourself even lower than I am. And I said, what is it, bud? And he said, Dad, I've been doing something and I've been keeping it a secret and I know it's not right. And I was talking with God about it, and I'm not making this up. I'm talking with God about it, and God told me I needed to come and tell you. And I also want to let you know that whatever the consequences you decide, I'm happy to take those as whatever consequences need to be. And I'm like, wow. I'll tell you what, I don't know if he was being manipulative or not, but perfect. I mean, that was incredible. I'm like, and so I said, okay, what is it? And he said, well, Dad, each morning, I've been going into the pantry and getting a little handful of nerd candy and eating it before I eat my breakfast. You know, and he's so serious. He's so, so serious. And I'm like, because that's what I was imagining with all my sinful past. That's the thing Liam was doing, right? No. So inside I'm going like, woohoo, this is great. But I'm trying to match his posture. I'm going, okay. And last Sunday at 4 a.m., I went to my mailbox when it was raining. There was boxes of nerds overflowing out of the mailbox, and it said, Happy City Lights Day. So people from my past know I used to like that candy, so my whole family is now eating boxes of nerds. That's where Liam got these nerds from. Well, here's what happened for me. I thought about my son, and I don't want to say he's the model of perfection or brokenness, but I think he really represented something powerful to me. I compared Bill Clinton's story to Liam's. And Bill Clinton privately, for the most part, seemed to have a form of brokenness. But he was looking for help. And what was Bill Clinton really looking for that day? Tell me, what do you think he was really looking for when he met with Billy Graham? Sympathy, and what else? Justification, what else? Those are really good. What do you think he was looking for? What do we usually look for when we're talking with somebody about something? When we try to go find a certain counselor or a certain advisor in our lives, we're looking for... I'm looking for answers, I'm looking for justification, I'm looking for sympathy, I'm looking for maybe some sort of way to wiggle out of this, but still do the right thing. Right? He's not fully willing to embrace, he's basically saying, I'll own and I'll embrace everything I have to, but would you help me understand what I have to own and still be right with God and still be right with the public? And Billy Graham said, just do what you're doing right now, just admit that what you did is wrong and ask for forgiveness and tell the world. And he said, I can do that with God, but I can't do that with man. He prized his position with man more than he prized the position of God. And I'm not trying to prop up a 9-year-old boy and say he did it right, but what my son did is this. Dad, I've done what's wrong in your sight, and I recognize my wrong was before God more than you. I've talked to God about it, and God's talked to me about it, and I'm willing to embrace any consequences you give me. What did he say and do? I'm broken, Dad, and I'm not looking for a shortcut. I'll take it. Where have you found yourself in your life? I found myself on both sides. I know that I've went and talked to certain people when I've done certain things because I believe they're going to help me wiggle out of the situation I'm in. Of course, I'm going to own certain things. And you know, our world, our culture says if you just own some of it, it's good. And we don't even use that language. We just say, oh, he admitted it, so it's okay for him to keep doing that. Oh, she admitted it, so it's okay for her to keep doing that. Rather than going, I am completely broken. There's nothing good in me, and I'm going to own every bit of it. So where have you been on that side of things? Have you found yourself trying to, like you guys said, justify, find sympathy, find a shortcut? Or have you found yourself at a certain point in your life where you said, I'm completely broken. Apart from God, I have nothing. It brings these three questions to my mind as we start our conversation this morning. What does authentic brokenness look like? What does authentic brokenness look like? Here's another question. How can I know if I've ever truly embraced my brokenness personally? Guys, these are incredibly important questions for us, and I believe the pastor is going to answer them for us. And the last one is this: how can my brokenness actually become or be beautiful to God? I mean, we really need to navigate through this. And I'll tell you, let me give it away. I know it's warm in here, and these chairs are crazy comfortable. So if you fall asleep, let me tell you what I want to say right now. The answers to these questions are eternally important for you and me. They have eternal consequences. In fact, you'll see in the passage today that unless we as people embrace our brokenness fully before God, the passage says that we will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. We will not be part of God. I was reading in different scholarly books this week, and it said if someone is truly not the beatitude, what we're going to read today in chapter 5, if people are not this thing, if they are truly not embracing their brokenness, they truly will never be able to embrace salvation. It's that consequential. It's that big. So what does authentic brokenness really look like? And how can I really truly know if I've ever embraced my own brokenness? And how can my brokenness ever become beautiful to God? If you have your Bibles, Matthew chapter 5 is where we're going to be this morning. This is where we'll be through our whole study, actually. Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. We haven't done this before, but I'm going to ask you to do this with me this morning. Would you guys stand as we read God's word? In the Old Testament, when the law was read, people would stand, and they would stand in a way of showing honor and showing approval and showing, yes, I'm standing attention. We don't always do it, and we might not do it every week, but I just felt like we need to do it this morning. So Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. I believe it'll be on the screens for you. I thought it was last week, and it wasn't. I could see by some people's faces once in a while, like, you keep saying it's behind you, and it's not, but let's see if it's there. Ah. Okay, here we go. It doesn't always come on with noise. Chapter 5, verse 1. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain. And when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And he opened his mouth. Jesus opened his mouth, and he taught these people, saying this. Verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. God, would you please speak to us? My words alone will not suffice for what we're hungry for and what we need today. Only your truth will bring us satisfaction. We need to hear from you. God, here we are. Will you speak to us now? Here we are. Would you speak to us now? Amen. You can be seated. To give you a little bit of context, and if you're just visiting with us, it's only week two, so you're probably just visiting with us. If you're just visiting with us and you don't have a Follow Me t-shirt on, you're probably visiting with us. We go through books of the Bible, and this series is really just going to go through these like nine verses of Matthew. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. And sometimes it can be difficult to understand really what was happening in the biblical history. And so when we go through books of the Bible, we try to understand the context of what's being said. That simply just means that we're trying to understand really what the intent of the author was, what was happening in history at this time. And so just for a few moments, I'd love to provide some context for you because it's actually pretty captivating context. So let's imagine Jesus just said what he said, but let's reverse and go back about 2,000 years. And as he ascends on this mountain, there are people all around him. And I told you last week, the people that are around him, some of these people were sick, diseased, outcasts, and they had found hope in Jesus. Jesus didn't only bring a social restoration to people, but he also brought a physical restoration to some people. He was healing people of their disease. And when they were made whole of their disease, they actually found that they were made whole in ways that were going to last much longer than physical. They found that they were finding wholeness emotionally and spiritually. And the physical was a wonderful sign that something had happened, but not everybody was always healed in the same way. But God was making people whole through Jesus. And so people were coming to see him. So this mountainside, when Jesus sat up here on the top of the mountain, people were gathered all around, some who were healed, some who were hoping to be healed, all different kinds of people, not just Jews, because the people of God came through Judaism. And so now you have all different kinds of people coming to Jesus, and all of them saying and thinking, this really truly might be the Son of God, because of the things that he is doing seem a whole lot like what the prophecies, what people have said for years and years and years about him. So as he ascends to this mountain, to us it might just sound like, oh, well, he was just giving his first sermon. And he was. But if you were a Jewish person and you had studied the scriptures, I want to show you really truly what they actually saw that day. You'll see it on the screen. And what you're going to see basically is the person Moses, which in the scriptures, Moses is regarded as a massively important figure. And watch how Moses' life unfolds and watch how Jesus' life unfolds as they both ascend a mountain. Watch the similarities are staggering. And you'll see, now it might be not real obvious to us, but the Jewish audience there, they would have went, this is really the one we've been looking to. This is the one we've been looking for. So check this out on the screens. You're going to see some comparison going back and forth. So obviously on the left, you have Moses, and on the right, you have Jesus. So if you guys remember the story, and if you don't, you can read through the book of Exodus today, and you can understand everything about Moses' history. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. Moses, when he was born, the Pharaoh, the leader of that time, ordered all the babies to be killed because he was intimidated that they might rise up and actually overwhelm and overpower his entire people group and his government. And so in Moses' time, Pharaoh orders all the babies to be killed. I don't remember, remember the story of Jesus and what was going on, but when Jesus is born, somebody was saying that a king was born today. And this intimidated Herod big time. So Herod orders all the male babies to be killed. So there's a parallel right at their birth. There's the same thing going on in history. The next thing, God calls God's people out of Egypt. And then right over here, Jesus is called out of Egypt as well. You see this after when the whole transition happens, when he goes and is born and has to move around because of the census. They have the similarity that Moses is going there and calling people out of Egypt, and Jesus gets called out of Egypt. And then Moses, as he brings people out of Egypt, he passes through the Red Sea. Jesus passes through the waters of the baptism when he is baptized. You see that earlier in the Gospels. And then Moses puts the people into 12 different tribes. After Jesus is baptized, what does he do? He goes and calls 12 disciples. 12 apostles. The people of God, because of their disobedience, wandered for 40 years in the desert. Jesus, not because of his disobedience, but because he was led to be tempted by the enemy, wanders. He sits there and is tempted for 40 days and 40 nights. You see any similarities? They're unbelievable. And then Moses, after the before the wandering, he ascends the mountain to receive God's law. And this is significant right here. Jesus, you see over here, ascends a mountain and delivers God's law. When Jesus comes up on the mountain and all these people are standing there, he starts to give the most authoritative, it's known as the most authoritative, life-giving, and best interpretation of what God was always about in history. So as he sits there with this context of people, and he starts to say these things. When he starts to say, and remember it says, seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit. When Jesus starts and says, blessed are the poor in spirit, he is giving an interpretation of God's law. We would say it's a reinterpretation, but it's really, the law had been so perverted at this point. If you were with us last week, you remember I shared that there were 613 different laws in the Old Testament. And I didn't mention last week that the Pharisees actually built laws around laws. They would have done something like this. If it was unlawful to drive your car faster than 45 miles per hour, the Pharisees would have said, you know what, just to make sure we don't drive over 45 miles per hour, let's put a governor on our car that will not allow it to go over 35 miles per hour. And that way, we will never transgress or break that law. So they went to 614. They would add a law. But what happened? Well, they lived in a hilly country. And so when they went down in their car, suddenly the car would go over 45 miles per hour. So they said, oh my goodness. And this didn't really happen. You know, it would have been like a camel illustration. All right. So, but that's what they did. They would draw lines. Eventually, a Pharisee would have said, since there's a potential that I will go over the speed limit in a car, I won't even get in a car, or I won't drive one. I'll let other people drive it. But if someone else is driving and they go over the speed limit, then I'm a transgressor as well because I'm on board. So then they would decide, I'm not even going to get in a car at all. In fact, I'm going to walk. So then they decided not just I'm going to walk because it's good for me. They said, I'm going to walk. I'm the model of righteousness. You need to walk as well. And they added law on top of the 613 laws. This is what these people understood that day on the mountain of what it looked like to be in fellowship with God. Do this, don't do that. Jesus comes and says, I'm going to give you the right interpretation of the law. And he starts by saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Now, this is important. We're going to look what it looks like and what it means to be blessed, and we're going to look at what it looks like to be poor in spirit, and it looks like to be people who mourn, because there's some significant things that are attached to it. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And you might hear this morning, like, if I say, like, hey, do you want to be part of the kingdom of heaven? I think all of us would go, yes, yeah, I want to be part of the kingdom of heaven. And the other one, comfort, I want that. But Jesus, he's giving us an almost linear picture of what it looks like to be part of the kingdom of heaven. So let's go ahead and break up some of these words, and we'll try to understand what it looks like to be blessed. Okay, so the first thing he says is, blessed are those who are poor in spirit. In our culture, you guys just give me a little culture test. What does our culture say about the word blessed? What does our culture say about a blessed life? Shout it out. What do they say? Okay, wow. There was like three people that said rich. So having money equals blessed. What else? Really great answer. That's probably number one. What else? Health. Okay, we've got health and wealth. If you're healthy, then you are blessed. What else? Happy. If you're lucky, you're blessed. Happiness, money, health, what else? Nice cars, famous. Listen, you guys nailed it. That's what our culture tells us. In fact, you will find books written under the banner of Christianity that I'm not trying to knock anybody who is a preacher or writer of these books, but I have seen books that promise and actually present a blessed life with God is all the things you just said. The problem is this. It goes drastically against the gospel that Jesus brought and the gospel that Jesus lived. In fact, if it's true that the culture says that a blessed life is having money and power and health and all those things, then what Jesus says right here is turning it on its head and saying, I'm going to actually tell you really truly what it looks like to be blessed. So that's right. Our culture says you can have your best life now. And your best life, quote, best means health, wealth, prosperity, and all these things. Now let me stop and say this. God might bless your life and you might have some of those things. But I do want to say this very clearly. That is not at all what Jesus is talking about here. Those things might happen. You might live in a wonderful home. You might have a great car, and if you're stewarding those things for God's kingdom, I don't have any problem with you doing that at all. And I don't think God has any problem with you doing that if at the heart level you're submitted to him. But what Jesus is describing is, this is what God is about, and he's about to define blessing. And I'm excited just to even talk about this because we're really going to try to understand what it looks like to be blessed. And this is the same word we're going to hear every week because he describes what blessed is. You're going to see a couple of definitions on the screen. If you want to take notes and write some of these down, check them out, and you can write them down. This first one's a little bit, a couple of these are a little bit long, but you hopefully can capture it. Let me give you just basically some description of what it means to be blessed biblically, what this word means right here. Blessed is a joy. It's joy which is completely independent of all the chances and changes of life. When Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, he's saying this person is blessed not because of something they have or don't have. It's tied to something else. See that big word, independent? When Jesus is saying this person is blessed, he's about to describe what kind of person it is. This person is blessed, he's saying it's not dependent on things. You being blessed is not dependent on your health, your wealth, your prosperity. It's on something other. It's something different than that. Let me go on reading. It's a joy. Listen to this. This is so great. And you kind of heard this in Tolian's video he just shared. It's a joy which seeks us through our pain. Whew. It's a joy that seeks us through our pain. It is joy which sorrow, loss, pain, and grief are powerless to touch, which shines through tears and nothing in life or death can take it away. Just stop and think for a moment. Doesn't that sound like a blessing? Would you rather have what that's describing or all of your debts paid and a bank account that never goes dry in this life? I mean that. Think about it. If this was some sort of game show and it's a game show, I'm like, all right, you choose. It's called You Choose. That's the new game show name. I was like, you choose. Would you rather have joy knowing that God looks upon you and says, I'm going to give you, I'm going to impart to you, I'm going to declare over you a joy that is completely independent of anything that you ever go through. Chance and change will never alter this blessing. Would you rather have that? Or you choose. Would you rather have anything that you make a list of in this life? Now, if we're to be real, I don't know. I mean, if I really sat here and the game show host said, you can write down three things, you can have anything you want on those things, or you can have an abiding joy that never goes away that's actually given to you by God, what would you choose? The scriptures, Jesus, the Son of God, says, I'm interested in blessing your life. And when he says that, he's not saying, I want to give you something that'll go away. He says, I want to give you something that'll never go away. Me. Relationship and fellowship with me that no one can take from you. No darkest hour, no horrible disease, no loss, and no gain can take it away. Guys, something that's really important to understand is being blessed is not a declaration of happiness. And I think a lot of times that's what we would say. Like, wow, you look so happy. Like that smile, I mean, what's going on? I'm just blessed. And a lot of times, now listen, I think a lot of us in this room could walk out of here and say that if you are truly saying, it's not because my circumstances are so good that I'm happy. I'm happy because I have God and he's bigger than my circumstances. And so I'm blessed. If you mean when you say I'm blessed that I have God and he's more than enough for me, in the highs and the lows, he is enough, then yeah, you are a person who understands blessing. But if you're walking through life and saying, and you're like, man, someone says, wow, you look so happy. You go, man, I'm blessed. And they go, what do you mean by that? You go, well, listen, I just got out of this financial debt, and my friend actually gave me a car, and it's amazing, and it's really great, and it looks like I'm gonna be able to move into this situation, or I met this person, or it looks like the promotion is gonna come through, or it looks like my mom is gonna be healed of what she's going. Listen, please hear me. I'm not saying that these things are wrong. But what I am saying is this: you have been designed to delight in something much richer, much more sustaining, that cannot be taken from you. Listen, just about everything in this life is going to be taken from us. Everything. A lot of us in this room are young, but some of us are older in years, and you know, some of us who have lived longer, and I'm 34, I count, things change. Your body changes, your mind changes, your health changes, your physical abilities change. Lots of things change. And if your hope is leeching, you're going, oh, I'm blessed because I can speak this way, or I can think this way, or I can convince people this thing, or I can pay for this thing. If you're leeching and holding on to those things that give you life, the blessing will be taken away at some point. And I'll say this, by God's grace, I hope that blessing's taken away from you and it's replaced with the true blessing of God. Happiness is not a declaration over you. The word blessed is not a declaration of happiness. In fact, the root of the word happiness, hap, means chance. Isn't that interesting? And so, and I think if we're real, like I could see you on a daily basis. If I saw you on a daily basis, I'd see you and say, how you doing? Some days you go, I'm happy. And I go, why? And you're like, well, look how beautiful it is out. Oh, so if it's sunny, you know, if it's sunny with a chance of partly cloudy, like, oh, that's great. It's so good. But if it's rainy, you're like, I ride my bike, and I can't do it. And so like, oh, I'm not blessed today. Listen, there is something called happiness, but it's chance emotion. It's not an eternal declaration. And Jesus in this message is saying, I want you to have a blessing that cannot be taken from you. I just want to say this to you guys. Do you want that? Do you want to understand that? Would you like to receive that? Would you like that to be part of your story? Would you? Do you want that kind of blessing? I guess I could just ask, do you feel like you have that kind of blessing? What's beautiful is this. Jesus is about to say that that kind of blessing comes through brokenness. Not qualifications like performance, commitment, promises, comparison. It comes through brokenness. So, I'd maybe ask you a question. Something like this. What have you been pursuing for blessing? In your life, if you were truly going to be real, and blessing is an abiding, seemingly ongoing joy, what have you been pursuing to receive or be a part of blessing? Is it a relationship? Is it a job? Is it a position? Is it acceptance? Is it a possession? What is it? Or is it God declaring blessed over you? Is that enough for your personal joy? I mean, Paul made it really clear. Is God enough for you? Is God declaring blessed over you enough for your personal joy? Or is your joy dependent on chances and changes? Let me just sum that up really, really clear. Happiness is dependent on the changes and chances of life. Happiness is dependent on that. And those things might come or go. But blessed is a joy given by God, which is completely independent of the chances and changes of life. Isn't that good news? It's so hard to hear from you guys in this room, but is that good news? And I don't, by the way, if I ever say, like, will you say that? If you don't believe it, please, I'm fine with crickets. I'm fine with nothing. That's okay with me. It's okay with me. So now that we understand what blessed is, I hope you understand what blessed is, and I hope you understand what blessed is not at this point. And we're going to get deeper and deeper into it each week. But now I think we have to understand who are the blessed, because he said blessed are. So he tells us who these people are. He tells us what they're like. He tells us the characteristics and quality of their life. So let's look what it says. Blessed are the poor in spirit. The poor in spirit. In the Greek, there are two words that make up the word poor. I think they're both going to be on the screen for you. There are two words that make up it up here. This first one is a man who works with his own hands to earn his living, but his living is just, it's small. He doesn't have much. And society might say that man is poor because he doesn't yet hit the socioeconomic level that needs to be met. That's not this word here. Jesus does not choose that word. He chooses this other word. A man who is completely in poverty, he's completely poverty-stricken, absolutely destitute. How would we describe this man? What does he have? He has nothing. That's the kind of poorness that Jesus is talking about. So he says, hey, you know who the real blessed people are? He looks out at all these people and says, you know who the most blessed people are up here on the mountain or in this theater today? It's people who recognize that they don't have anything, not the people who have some things. That's what Jesus is saying. That's who it is. In Hebrew, poor was similar to this second word here. And it simply just meant a man who has nothing earthly, so he puts his whole trust in God. And if you read through the Psalms, we're actually going to just fly through some Psalms real quick. Every time you see each Psalm describing something about this person, when it says poor, it's not talking about somebody who doesn't have much financially. It's talking about, and this is where it's really important, it's talking about the posture of your heart. It's talking about what's going on inside of you. You recognize, I need something, and it is not ever going to be found in things. It's going to be found in God. So look at these Psalms with me. You'll see them on the screen. Psalm 34, verse 6 says, this poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all of his troubles. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him. Poor man, not saying, I need money, but saying, I don't have anything. I'm crying out to you. What did God do for this man in the Old Testament? Saved him. Heard him. You see, God hears the brokenhearted and the crushed in spirit, and he's near to them, the scriptures tell us. Just keep looking at him. This is giving us the understanding of what it means to be poor. Next one just says this, 9:18. For the needy shall not always be forgotten, and the hope of the poor shall not perish forever. The needy, the spiritually, I need, and the hope of the poor, not give me money, but I need something bigger and more sustaining and lasting than money, something that God only can bring. Chapter 35, all my bones shall say, O Lord, who is like you? Delivering the poor from him who is too strong for him, the poor and the needy from him who robs him. And he's still, again, in the Hebrew, in the ancient Jewish context, constantly when they talked about a poor man and a needy man, they were saying, the man who recognizes that he has nothing to commend himself to God. He needs God to act on his behalf over and over again. 68 says this, your flock found a dwelling in it, and in your goodness, O God, you provided for the needy. And it goes on and on and on. There are more Psalms. I don't need to keep reading them because you get the idea, right? Do you get the idea? That the Old Testament idea of poor was a posture of the heart. The New Testament idea of the poor was a posture of the heart, meaning what's going on inside. It wasn't this outward expression. The Pharisees, remember the people I talked about last week? They were all consumed by righteousness and doing all the laws. It's the people I was talking about with the speed limit, and they had all these laws, and they added more laws to not violate laws. These people were only interested on the outward. And Jesus looks at them and says, you know who the blessed people are? It's not the blessed people who uphold and keep all the law and become proud in their spirit. It's the people who look at the law and go, I can't do it. I'm humbled in my spirit. I'm poor in my spirit. I'm broken in my spirit. Do you see that? Do you see the shift? It's not this outward, look at me and what I can do. It's this inward, look at me and what I can do. I can't do anything. Isn't that hard in our culture, especially for you men in your careers, as a provider? As somebody who promised at some point to your wife that you'd do this and do that and you can't find a job or you lost the job or you're underemployed. Danger, danger. You were never supposed to find your sustenance in what you do anyway. You're supposed to find your identity in who God is. And you ladies, some of you as wives and moms, if you're trying to find it in your family, your kids are most likely going to grow up and head to college and move away and they might not live anywhere near you. So if your identity's wrapped in that, you are meant for something more abiding and lasting to bring about blessing than anything. The Old Testament, the New Testament, Jesus is really putting the whole teaching that the Pharisees had, he's just flipping it on their heads, and he's not trying to be mean. But basically, here's how you could sum up what Jesus is saying is this. Blessed is the man who is wholly dependent on God and detached from all other things. I could ask that in a question form, right? Brother, sister, friend, are you fully and wholly dependent on God to make you and keep you who you are? Or are you holding on to other things? Or I could say to you, because this is, I mean, if we're going to be real and transparent with one another, there are probably things in your life that you will attach joy to this week. Am I right? I do. I do. Hey, look at me standing in front of all you. Do you think that my joy is not being challenged of how well this does go or doesn't go? It would be a complete lie if I didn't say I battled this week thinking about how this message would go this morning. The air conditioner's not going on right now, and I'm really getting hot. For me, I'm not blessed, man. Come on, it's hot in here. I'm just getting sweaty. That's really not a temptation for me. But you know what? Doing well up here, you growing, you learning about God, you stepping in with God. I don't necessarily, by any means, I'm not really interested in you saying, hey, you did a great job. But I'm interested in God and his work becoming real to you. If we're to be really, truly transparent with each other, what things are you looking to this week to bring you joy? You'll know when you're ticked off or frustrated this week, you know I was looking for this as the definition of blessing rather than who God declares me to be, a son or daughter of him that remains forever. Things mean nothing. God means everything is what Jesus is getting at. That's what he's trying to describe. And poor simply describes the inner man, not the outward man. That's all he's getting at. What does our culture say? Our culture would say this, if the culture man got up on the hill, he'd say this, blessed is the man who's satisfied with himself. Wouldn't he? And that's what we do. Don't we envy people who have everything and they're happy? You know, we envy people who have everything and go like, man, they're so happy, they're satisfied. They've got it all. We envy them. What we're saying is, I see that person who's most satisfied in himself and everything that he or she is holding together, that person's most blessed. Not because they have the best stuff, but they do have some stuff. Guys, listen, I'm not condemning having possessions. I hope none of you hear that this morning at all. But you're not meant to be possessed by possessions. You're God's. He made you, and he's given you the opportunity to be remade in Jesus Christ if you put your trust in him. I don't hear it much anymore, but I used to see, a lot of times I would see it on the back. We grew up in South Florida, and I'd see it on the back of guys' boats, usually like big cigarette boats. If you don't know what a cigarette boat is, it's not like a big cigarette like that goes in the water. It's just a real fast, loud boat, and it would smoke a little bit. And not cigarettes again, but just engine smoke. And on the back, it would say, he who dies with the most toys wins. This idea of when I get, I'll be blessed right down to the point that I die. It's not true. It's not true. So let me just say a couple things what poor isn't. This is important, I think. Poor in spirit is not about material riches. It's not about even material poverty. And there have been teachings where people say to be most Christian is to possess nothing and to be poor. If that's the case, then the scriptures would not encourage you to help anyone who's poor. If you're intended to be poor and have nothing, then why does the scriptures call us to help those who are in need? It's not a correct interpretation. It's not about material poverty. Being poor-spirited, meaning lacking drive or like, oh, I'm just self-loathing. It's not what it's about. Or suppressing your personality. Listen, to be poor in spirit doesn't mean you have to change your personality. You don't have to change your personality to be poor in spirit. I think sometimes we've tried to look Christian and we've tried to look like a poor in spirit person. We've tried to look the part. God's not asking you to look the part. He said, I played the part. I fulfilled it all for you so that you can be renewed in me. And when you're renewed in me, you'll look like this. You know what's amazing about all of this whole series, Brokenness is Beautiful? None of these things are a prescription of what your life needs to look like. It's a description of what your life looks like when you're trusting God and doing life with him. It should be very liberating. I'm not telling you, go out and be poor in spirit. I'm saying, if you walk with God, poor in spirit comes out. When you walk with God, you go, wow, you are amazing, God. And you can't help when you're talking with God and learning about him to compare yourselves and go, wow, you are and I'm not. And he goes, that's beautiful. If you really understand that at your heart level, that's a person who's poor in spirit. Do you know who I would argue is the most poor in spirit person in history? Who do you think it is? Sunday morning, it's a Sunday school answer.
Jesus.
Yep, even have a little crack, puberty. Why was Jesus the most poor in spirit person in history? Why? Why do you think he was? Tell me why, if that's true. That wasn't rhetoric. Tell me why. Why do you think Jesus was poor in spirit? You got it? You all said, Jesus, why? Besides it was a Sunday school answer. What's that? Yeah. He never looked to himself. the Son of God in human form, which I know if you're not around church and religious circles and heard from the Bible, you're going like, that's difficult. Me too. How God became fully man and fully God at the same time. But as he was fully man and fully God, he never did anything on his own initiative. If you're interested in like, where did you get that from? Today, I'll give you a Bible. You can read through the book of John. It tells you all about it. It's amazing. You know what Jesus says over and over and over in the book of John? People looked at him and said, how did you do that? And they're almost saying this. You're living a real blessed life. You speak with authority. You're doing things that are blessing people. Where does that come from? What does he say? Everything that you see me do is because I'm dependent on the Father. And everything I say is because he said it. And everything I do is because I see him doing it. Poor in spirit. The Son of God, like if there's somebody that could walk around and go, I can lean on my own understanding. I can do my own thing. I am perfectly worthy to be dependent on. I've got it going on. He said, the same thing. You know what's so beautiful about Jesus? He shows us the way. He is the way, the truth, and life to the Father, but he also shows us the way that our lives would look if we were in that same relationship with God. Fully dependent. Poor in spirit, Jesus Christ. So just in case you're like, I think I can do this poor in spirit thing, it looks like Jesus. And you go, oh. But listen, if you're part of City Lights, you will never be challenged with less of a life than Jesus's, because he has remade you in him to live a life like his, declaring to the world that they can be rescued through him. People who are poor in spirit constantly say, God, I cannot be right enough. I can't be good enough. I can't be strong enough. I can't be smart enough. I can't do this on my own. I need you. It's the same thing that Jesus said, the Son of God. He invites us and says, blessed are the people who are poor in spirit. That's a model for us. Because I don't know who comes to mind when you think of poor in spirit, maybe Mother Teresa or someone like that. But ultimately what someone poor in spirit is somebody, it's not about the riches, it's not about material things, it's all about the posture of the heart. Heidi Baker, she's a missionary in Mozambique and she's been caring for children. I think 7,000 some orphans have been cared for through her ministry. She says it like this. Someone who's living in socioeconomic poverty, poor in spirit is not an economic position, it's a posture of the heart. Some of you are going, man, I'm glad I came here today, because when I saw or heard poor in spirit, I was like, man, I'm going to have to sell stuff, aren't I? Because I've got a nice car. Listen, I don't know, maybe you got to talk to God about what's going on in your heart, not the outside. It's not about an outward change. It's about an inward change that changes what you do on the outward. Not so you can be right with God, but because God has made you right with him and it changes your motivation entirely. It's beautiful. So poor in spirit is this. Maybe a good word would be this. It's bankruptcy. And I've seen a lot of different people claim bankruptcy, and so I don't even know if I have a perfect understanding of it, but what I understand with bankruptcy is this. There is more things that I owe money to, more debt than I personally can pay, so I go to the government and I surrender myself and say, I cannot pay my debts. In me, of myself, I cannot continue to sustain life the way it is. I need help. It's a full declaration of, I cannot do this, I'm at your mercy. Just like when Liam said, I'm owning this to the full degree, and the government comes and gives aid and says, you can file for bankruptcy, we'll accept that, and we'll pay your debts for you. Poor in spirit is somebody who looks at God and says that. God, emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually, I'm bankrupt. I am bankrupt. I cannot pay enough forward for emotional strength and stability. I can't get my life together emotionally. I can't do this, God. I need help. So beauty is birthed from a mind that knows it's broken or bankrupt. And a beautiful life is a spiritually bankrupt life. And brokenness that looks like spiritual bankruptcy is beautiful to God. Let me just read a couple of these last quotes. Poor in spirit is a posturing of the heart where one is wholly given, fully yielded, completely desperate, and totally dependent on God alone. That's Heidi Baker again. She gets it, huh? She gets it. She's got it right there. So, so good. So poor in spirit is an inner response. It's an inner spirit response, posture, and presentation. So ultimately, when Jesus is saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, are you understanding what he's talking about? It's someone who will stand before God and say, I'm going to own the fact that I can't do this on my own. I'm going to own that I can't do it on my own. That's simple and plain. I can't do it, God. I can't do it. You could say it like this. Blessed is the man who will not find contentment in himself. Refuse. When the world praises you and tells you this is good and you know you did something good, say, no, I'm not going to allow myself to find my identity in this. his soul at the deepest secret place, which no person can plumb, meaning at the sinful place, at the deepest place, you realize, I can't get myself out of this, will say, there's nothing in me to commend me to God. This is probably my favorite way of describing this. When we embrace our personal limitation, God brings divine liberation. You know what it's like to try to perform, don't you? Jesus was looking at people who were performing, and everybody said, you're doing such a good job. And he looked at everybody else who was actually literally poor, and the world said, you have no place part of the kingdom. You have no place in the kingdom of God. And he says, actually, you know who is an inheritor of the kingdom of God? And by the way, this is present tense when Jesus says it. He says, the poor in spirit are presently experiencing the kingdom of God. This was huge news that the kingdom of God could even come to someone who was poor in spirit. Somebody who had nothing did not look like a reflection of the kingdom of God. And God said, nope, they've got everything. Because in their nothingness, they found everything in God. He simply goes on to say, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. I took a lot of time on poor in spirit because it's not something culturally we understand. But you know what it means to mourn. You know, you can think of poor in spirit like the mental, thinking a certain way. I need to think this way about my life and myself, spiritually, emotionally, physically. Mourning is what? What is mourning? It's an emotion. So Jesus is saying this, blessed is the person who thinks a certain way about their sin and about themselves, and blessed is the person who feels a certain way about it. Because some of you guys this morning, when you start thinking about your depravity, you think about your wrongdoing, you think about how you don't have it all together, there should be some sort of emotion in you that goes, oh, that doesn't feel real good. And Jesus follows up poor in spirit with, and it's a blessed thing. It's a good thing to feel emotion about that too. And he simply says, the kingdom is for those people who think that way, and there's comfort coming for those who feel it too. Do you see what he's getting at? He's saying brokenness is beautiful. It's good to recognize your brokenness. And when he sees that brokenness, he says, now I can fill you with beauty. You know, somebody who doesn't have anything has all of themselves to be poured into by God, all of his beauty. They're just an empty container, right? You see that? And so, guys, I just want to encourage you, and I want to just kind of finish asking you a couple of questions because we're totally out of time. Have you embraced that there is nothing in you that commends you, that can commend you to God? Nothing in you that can commend you to God. And by the way, at some point in your life, that might have been a terrifying question. The answer is, hopefully, yeah, I recognize there's not, but I recognize that Jesus has fully done everything that needs to be done so that I can be commended to God and accepted. Have you embraced that there's nothing that can commend you to God and that you're spiritually bankrupt? If so, what prevents you from embracing that you truly are poor in spirit? What prevents you from really knowing and believing that you're poor in spirit? Those who mourn will be comforted. You are meant to find comfort in God alone. And he does that through people. Steve even talked about that this morning in our welcome time, that he encourages and brings comfort through people. But what are you finding comfort in? Because you're meant to find lasting, non-transferable, meaning it will never go away, comfort from God. If it's dependent on your circumstances that you're trying to find comfort, then it's not blessed. It's not blessed. And will it commend you to God? Just want to close with this. Man, you guys can come up. What prevents you from presenting yourself today, spiritually, mentally, and emotionally, broken to God in this moment? Because embracing personal brokenness brings about divine wholeness. And I know every single person on this planet wants to be whole. Be, feel, whole. There's a great hymn called Rock of Ages. Some of you are maybe familiar with it. Listen to these lyrics. Nothing in my hand I bring, simply to the cross I cling. Poor in spirit. Naked I come to you for dress. I don't even have anything to clothe myself with. Helpless, look to thee for grace. Foul, I'm filthy, I to the fountain fly. Wash me, Savior, or I die. This person's saying, if I don't have you, God, I have nothing. And God looks at that person and says, beautiful. Embracing your brokenness it's this incredible exchange happens where he says, I'm going to bring wholeness. That is not contingent or dependent on any circumstances, changes, or chances. It's dependent on the finished work of Jesus Christ. The finished work of Jesus Christ. So last thing I ask you is this, how can you more deeply embrace your spiritual bankruptcy with your head and with your heart, with your mind and with your emotions? Would you please today, even as we respond to God in song, would you consider what it might look like to more deeply embrace your brokenness? Listen, there is no depth that you can go with who you are and how broken you are that God is not yet deeper still. Let me just say it again. There's no memory that you can unearth that God's grace will not get underneath and refresh and renew and revitalize and speak into it and say, I can make that beautiful. There's nothing so broken in you that God cannot pay that debt. He's that thorough. He's that good. Embracing personal limitation will bring about divine liberation. Do you want that divine freedom in your life? From performance, from the have-tos, all that pain and heaviness. Jesus stood on that mountain, and I stand here today with the same word saying, hey, that blessing is available to you if you live dependently on Jesus and independently of things, because they'll steal that thing from you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. If the Lord used this message to speak to you, would you consider leaving us feedback on our iTunes or Facebook page? We would love to hear about what God is doing in your life. If you would like to know more about City Lights and how you can get involved, please visit our website at www.citylights.cc for more information. Have a great day.